Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Today's episode trigger warnings are violence, mention of abductions, and explicit sexual content.
And I have a Apple review, and this one comes from Spicy Bunghole. And it says, obsessed. I told everyone but my mom. You girls are the best. I'm so glad I started sneaking this into my work playlist. Thank you. No, thank you.
Spicy Bunghole.
Yeah. I also have a spicy bunghole. I get it.
And this week we're telling Riley all about The Predator by Runix. And how many stars did you guys give it on Goodreads?
I have a confession. This is my first podcast DNF.
What?
Oh.
Is that allowed?
I don't know.
Oh my goodness.
I got like halfway through and I said, I can't do this anymore. I don't know what it was. I can't specifically name one thing about it. I just wasn't about it. So, Riley, you and I will find out what happens together.
Oh, yay.
Life's too short to read a book you don't like. Unless you have to take notes on the last chunk of the book, then you have to finish it.
And I was the first part of it, so.
Shelby said, God bless.
I support you, Shelby, but that's criminal. Only because I loved it.
Checks out.
I give it a 4.5. I loved it. This was like a true, legit enemies to lovers. And I loved it.
I gave it a 3. If we were being more specific, I'd probably give it like a 2.75. There were certain things in this book. And honestly, I'm telling you, I skimmed the shit out of this book because I did not enjoy it. There were some things that I was just so bothered by, like grammatical errors. Like, I don't know if she didn't have an editor, and that takes me out of it. Don't take me out of my fucking reading.
I listened to the audiobook, so that's probably why.
It's 1985, and two men from the Tenebris outfit are meeting two men from the Shadowport, which is a rival mafia gang. The meeting is to end their rivalry. Alcohol and guns were going to be the face of this new operation, but behind the scenes, there would be something that would make them way more money. The alliance begins when one of the outfit leaders opens his car trunk to reveal two unconscious girls. So we get the sense that it's going to be like a sex trade. It's present day and Mirana is at a party she should not be at with the plan that needs to go 100% smooth. It requires her to be in a full disguise and have knives strapped to her thighs. She sees her target, Tristan Kane, talking to his boss, Lorenzo Bloodhound Marino, and his son Dante. Tristan isn't blood related to the Maronis at all, but he is the heir to the outfit instead of Dante. He's obviously very attractive.
Tristan the Predator Kane. They called him the Predator. His reputation preceded him. He rarely went on the hunt, but when he did, it was over. When he did, he went straight for the jugular. No distractions, no playing around. For all his unruffled attitude, the man was more lethal than the knife cutting into her thigh. He was also the reason she had come to the party. She was going to kill Tristan Kane. Get him. Kill him.
Kill him. And then the book can be done.
Yeah.
We learn that she is the daughter of the Shadowport leader and he's stolen something from her, so she's there to get it back and kill him. We also learn that she wouldn't be here if she didn't design these developer codes that could deface anyone digitally, as well as expose the entire government and all mobs around the world. So she's like another super computer genius and she created codes that will take everyone down and they got stolen.
Get them back, girl.
Her ex stole them and disappeared 3 weeks ago. She learns that her ex was used by the enemy outfit to get close to her and have her create the codes, and then he gave them to Tristan. She stalks him through the party towards the house when she's stopped by a guard. She knocks him out and then continues on until she comes to a semi-dark guest room. She goes into the guest room to hide, and Tristan comes out, and then she pounces and holds one of her knives to his back. She demands that he give her the drive that he got from Jackson Miller. He tells her that it's in his jacket pocket and it's enough to distract her for a moment while he gets the upper hand, spinning her and slamming her against the wall. He demands to know who sent her and what drive she's even talking about. And that's when he recognizes her and tells her that she needs to leave the house now or she's going to start a war. She doesn't put up a huge fight knowing that she can't win against him, and defeated, she goes to leave, but he tells her that she now owes him and he will one day collect because he didn't kill her like he should have. It's a week later and she gets a message from Jackson saying that he's in trouble regarding the codes and it's life or death. She needs to meet him at a specific abandoned building at 6 p.m. Why? Why would you go there?
Meet me at a Starbucks.
She goes to the meeting spot knowing there's a 50-50 chance that it's actually a trap, but she brought her gun. He calls her to tell her to come into the building, but she stands in the doorway not going until he explains himself. And that's when she hears him talk to someone else. She crouches behind some debris and grabs her gun, getting ready, but Jackson tells her to just help them and no one's gonna get hurt. Then someone's behind her holding a gun and it's Tristan.
No.
They get into a standoff and Dante appears, introducing himself, saying that he wishes they were meeting differently, but she tries to act super tough and says she's not impressed and demands answers. He tells her Jackson is dead and they needed to lure her here to talk about the codes and how detrimental it would be to both families if they got out. Tristan never worked with Jackson to get the codes, even if she traced them back to him, and it must have been a setup, so they want to team up with her to figure out who did it. She says not for $1 million, and she leaves dreaming about the day she'll kill Tristan. It's been another week, and she knows that she needs to tell her dad everything that happened. As she heads home, she can't help but wonder if her life would be different if her mother was still around. She then wonders if Tristan really does have the codes and he's lying for whatever reason, because something does seem off about him. Just as she makes the last steps to her father's study, she hears them talking about her. His right-hand man and her dad discuss how dangerous she is and how she doesn't know it, but they better keep it that way. Her dad's right-hand man, Thomas, walks out and she's about to knock on the door, but he tells her to enter. They can talk after they have dinner. It's at 7:30 and she can't be late, and then he dismisses her.
What's happening at dinner?
She also knew that the second that she told her dad about the codes, he would point blank murder her. So she's like a baddie. She was like, I am about to die and it's worth it.
By her own dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's a mafia man.
You do this to me and my family.
At the restaurant, while her father and his men talk business, she notices Dante is there with Tristan and two other men. Her and Tristan lock eyes, and then her dad catches her focus, saying that he will meet her at home and they can finally talk. He leaves, and she sneaks out the back door when Tristan comes into view approaching her. Her guard is easily taken down by Tristan, and she goes to walk to her car, but realizes all exits are blocked when Dante and the two other men show up. She calls Tristan's bluff and tries to be a badass, but he's not buying it. She tries to call his bluff on hurting her since it's yet to happen. She's like, do it. You haven't done it once yet.
Hurt me.
What are you fucking waiting for?
But what if you say that and then he's like, okay, bow.
She's prepared to die.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
He tells her one day he will claim his debt from her and she will enjoy repaying it. And then all the men leave. And I put in parentheses, what was the fucking point of that scene?
The drama.
No information was given. Nothing.
The tension. Jenna's like, it works. It works.
She's confused to what just happened. Me too, girl. Because it had nothing to do with the codes. It's been 2 days since the restaurant, and she never ended up talking to her dad about everything. So she spends 2 more days trying to track and reverse the codes with new codes, but doesn't have any luck. Her phone rings and she answers it. It's Tristan. He's at her house to do business with her and he hangs up. She watches him scale the outside wall to her balcony, and once inside her room, he tells her that he truly doesn't have the codes and he needs her to work with Dante to figure out who does.
Okay, he just scales through the side of your house to get in. Hey, I'm here at your house. I'm just going to spider monkey my way in. See you in a minute.
He's the enemy, and if he's seen on her grounds, he will die. Because she has security everywhere.
Okay, she has security everywhere, but her security is objectively bad.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. They can't see a full-grown man climbing the building.
Yeah. She says, okay, but on one condition. She only works with Dante, not him. He says, done, and then he climbs back down.
That is so not sexy. Imagine like a full-grown man just being like, all right, cool. And then he just starts climbing down the wall.
Instant ick.
Yeah.
She's having her first meeting with Dante at a nightclub, and it's her first time at a nightclub because her dad doesn't let her go to those. It's called Cyanide, and I put, absolutely fucking not. I am not going to a nightclub called Cyanide.
Get a drink there.
Yeah, we're going to kill ya. We're going to poison ya.
We finally get our first real description of Morena.
She had a pretty face, nothing that anybody would write sonnets about, but pleasing to look at. Her frame was short, on the smaller side, with decent breasts, a good ass, and a stubborn little love handle around her tummy she couldn't get rid of. Okay.
It's not a flattering description.
No.
She's like, she's all right.
She's pleasant. She's average. A little love handle around her tummy she couldn't get rid of. Fuck you. First of all, fuck you.
Dante ushers her to the VIP section, and of course, Tristan is on one of the couches. Dante quickly explains to her that he wasn't planning on Tristan being there because of the deal that they made, but it just happened to be a coincidence he showed up.
Aww.
They get down to business discussing the codes and how he doesn't think it was an outside job who hired Jackson. He asks her to trace some of the anomalies on Jackson's account and then hands her a flash drive with everything he found. She tells him that she'll report back, and then she goes to the bar for a drink. She gets an orange juice because the bartender seems sleazy and she doesn't want any alcohol from him. And I put, bitch, a drink is a drink.
Uh-huh.
Alcohol doesn't matter. The woman Tristan was with comes up to talk to her, but thinks better of it and walks away, which also fucking weird. Then she feels dizzy and it's hard to stand. She's been roofied, and I put, duh, bitch.
You're in a place called Cyanide.
She's like, oh no, how did this happen? I didn't drink any alcohol.
Before she can fall, Tristan is there catching her. He lets Dante know that someone spiked her drink, and the woman that he's with, Amara, can babysit her until she's fine. She passes out on the couch as he walks away. When she wakes up, she's in a car being driven home by Amara. She learns Tristan took care of the bartender and is now following them back to her house. She makes Amara stop the car so she can drive the rest of the way home because the enemies can't go into her territory. Amara gets in the car with Tristan and they drive away, so she's left with the question of why he did that when he claims that he hates her and wants to kill her.
Yeah.
Wonder why. As she goes to drive home, a scary blacked out SUV starts following her until a person on the bike gets between them and shoots at the SUV like a John Wick movie.
Oh, wow. Pow, pow.
The SUV leaves on a completely flat tire and the biker takes his helmet off. Of course it's Tristan, and he taps his ear before a Bluetooth call comes into her car. She asks him who the SUV was, and he says that he'll find out when he gets back. But he has to escort her home now because of the sensitive information on the flash drive that she got from Dante. As he follows her back to her house, he tells her he did also save her because he wants the last face she sees before she dies to be his. He wants to do the job.
As if he hasn't had like 17 opportunities this entire book.
Once she's home, she's immediately called into her father's study. He tells her that he knows she was at Cyanide somehow, since it's invite only, and he wants to know who she's pimping her body out to.
Dad.
As he literally tries to pimp her out to his friends.
Yeah.
He tells her that he will be the one to choose her husband, and then she's dismissed. The next day, she works on the thumb drive, and she finds some tech thing that she calls Dante about, and they plan to meet up soon so he can have the drive back. She gets ready and leaves to meet him, but can't shake the guard that's on her tail. Because usually she can evade her dad's guards, but this one she can't. She tries to call Dante to tell him, but he doesn't answer, so she calls Tristan. He gets on his bike, finds her location, and then helps her lose her guard. They get to a location, and Dante calls telling her to give the drive to Tristan. He's a little tied up right now. But then they are attacked by three men. She shoots one, and Tristan kills one. He tells her to leave while he handles the last man, and when she gets to her car, all four tires are slashed. So she has no other option than to stay with Tristan.
Call an Uber.
When they say, like, they don't have options, I'm like, you do.
You have a lot.
Literally filthy rich.
Yeah.
You can call a cab. You can call an Uber.
Several things you could do. You could run.
Yeah.
Even speed walk.
Yeah.
Yeah, a nice power walk.
Yeah.
Morana is shook that she's about to have a sleepover in her enemy's house. They get to the mirrored elevator heading up to the penthouse, and he tells her he doesn't know who those men were, but he's pretty sure that someone wants her very dead. She tells him she's learned not to be afraid of death since it sleeps under her roof every single night, because her father is literally like, one step out of line, I'll fucking shoot you.
Bye-bye.
They get to his penthouse, and of course, it's literally floor-to-roof glass walls and completely stunning. Tristan tells her where the guest bedroom is, and he turns to leave her to it. She does what any logical person would do. She snoops around. The living room is very modern, clean, monotoned colors, and his bedroom is the complete opposite. It's all rich earth tones and feels extremely comforting and inviting, which is literally like the exact opposite of what she has in mind for Tristan. So she's like, who the hell is this man?
Oh my God. Couldn't be the work of an interior designer.
Just as she was about to leave, the bathroom door opens in his bedroom and Tristan walks out with the low towel on his hips looking like a damn snack.
Oh, man.
He's got scars all over his body from bullets and knives, and he could feel her staring, and his gaze locks on hers, and he takes a step forward, then another, then another.
She tilted her neck back, her back arching as her feet moved of their own accord backward, completely forgetting that she stood at the top of the stairs. She felt her balance tip a second before gravity hit her, her hands reaching out to hold on to something and finding purchase against the warm, solid muscles of his arms. Even as she steadied herself, Marana felt his hand slip to the back of her neck, cupping her nape as he pulled her back from the edge and upright. With nothing but his hold on her neck, heart thudding, her hands full of muscles she'd never felt against her palms, Marana looked up at him while he looked down, his hold on her neck firm but not threatening, a sort of almost edge to the grip she couldn't place.
So she was just about to fall down the stairs. I would have been much less graceful than that. I would have been like, ugh.
He said, don't worry, Pookie, I'll save you. Their almost moment was ruined by her phone ringing, and it was none other than her father, who's pissed she slipped her detail. After their call, Tristan tells her it was one of the bartenders who drugged her at Cyanide, and she asked why. Tristan looked like he's barely keeping himself in check. When he finally goes to answer, Dante comes home, and he doesn't answer. He tells her that Tristan already arranged for her car to be repaired in the morning, and if she doesn't want to spend another night with Tristan, then he can spend the night at his house, because Dante lives like two floors down.
She saw Tristan Kane stop on the stairs before she could speak, his entire body tensing as he turned to face Dante, his eyes cool. She stays here, he growled.
She stays here.
Tristan vowed that she won't come to any harm tonight.
If you want to kill her, just kill her.
Yeah, do that.
Later, she's at Tristan's house still, and she's having a main character moment in front of his floor-to-ceiling glass wall. She's watching the rain dramatically fall down. This reminds me of, like, a Hilary Duff when you're in the car listening
Let
to Hilary Duff.
Let the rain fall down
and wake my dreams. Yeah. So she's watching the rain fall down on the glass pane. She has her hand up to the glass. It's like a whole main character moment. And she has an overwhelming feeling of loneliness and is having like an existential crisis in her enemy's house. She's silently cursing the wind when she feels him. Instead of taking advantage of her vulnerable moment, he takes a seat next to her and watches the rain with her in solitude.
Oh my God.
The drama.
I know. After sitting for a while, he speaks and he tells her that his sister loved the rain. She tells him she didn't know he had a sister. And he says, I don't anymore.
She's dead.
She's taken back because he shares something so intimate and private with her, and it causes her to open up and tell him that her mother loved the rain as well. And he's like, I thought you had a mom. And she says, not anymore.
Oh my God.
They sat in comfortable silence for the rest of the night together, an unspoken truce, as she knows that when the sun comes up, it would be all over. Marana is having a gut feeling that something not good is about to happen because her father has not called once since they last spoke. And that is not a good sign. Usually he's up her ass. Amara comes in and Marana wants to make friends with her hella bad, but she can't because she's worried about dragging her down into her family mess and potentially threatening her life.
Fair.
Dante and Tristan come in the house and they catch her up on the findings of the warehouse. She asked her most important question of what would happen to Tristan if the codes were used since he was framed. And the answer is simple. It would mean his death. Marana quickly ruled out Tristan as a suspect. Amara gave her car keys back and Marana knew that she had to head home. The second she got home, it felt off. The only thing her father said to her was that they were to dine at Crimson tonight and she was to ride with him, which is not part of their unspoken deal. She always drives her car and doesn't say a word at dinner in favor of her showing up to dinner with her father.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that she's riding with him, she feels really uneasy about it.
Scary.
At dinner, some man was sitting next to her and he was literally trying to get his hands under her dress all dinner long.
Ew, disgusting.
She had it and grabbed his hand and bent his fingers backwards and told him if he touches her again, she will break his fingers. As she's looking around the room, she feels him. His eyes are on the back of her neck and she obviously didn't turn to verify it was him, but she innately knew that Tristan Cain sat at the table behind her. She texted him and said, "Stop staring at me." And he texted her back one word, "No." Tristan was baiting her through text message and the stupid handyman groped her thigh again and she's had it. She snapped his wrist backwards and he screamed at her saying, "You bitch." His men pulled guns on her. Her father's men pulled guns on them. And she's like, "What? I warned you not to do it again."
Yeah, don't fucking touch me.
Her father told her to go cool down. So she went to the bathroom. And a minute later, someone walked in the bathroom after her. And it's Mr. Sexy Blue-Eyed Tristan Cain.
"We've been honest so far, Miss Vitalio," he murmured. "I'll be honest now. I despise you, but I want you. Fuck it. I do. And I want you out of my system."
Okay.
As he described her as completely average looking.
She's literally only had sex once with Jackson, and it was mediocre at best, but she's lusting after Tristan. So she decides to get him out of her system too and locks the door. They're about to do the dang thing, but first things first, no kissing. This is purely physical.
Kissing is physical. I don't understand that.
She's like, "I don't want your face anywhere near me. Get away from me. Like, I just want your dick."
Okay. Okay.
When he can tell she's inexperienced and brings it up, that pisses her off even more and she turns to leave. And the next thing she knows, he picks her up and places her on top of the granite countertop in front of the mirror.
Before she could blink, he closed the gap between them, his hands going straight to her thighs, parting them wide as he stepped between her legs, his face inches from hers, his eyes still holding that mix of sheer lust and utter hate. More than hate for just her. Was it for himself? For wanting her? Because Lord knew she hated herself for wanting this. Wanting him.
Just do it.
He's grinding himself on her and she's like, "Wait, you have a condom, right?" And he's like, hella annoyed at her for asking that. He like stopped and like glared at her and doesn't answer.
It's a valid question.
Yeah, she's like, "Don't even think you're going anywhere near me if you do not have a condom." They're fooling around until it's time to get down to business, and finally he puts the condom on.
She needed him to rut against her and make her explode. Not like a bomb, but like a woman. So badly. What the fuck? Not like a bomb, but like a woman.
Yeah.
Okay. God, she needed to scream her lungs out as he fucked her like his eyes promised every single time he'd looked at her. Like they had promised since they'd met. She needed to feel wanton, sexed up. And she hated it. Hated that need. Hated him for making her need like a desperate maniac. A rapid heartbeat passed, and suddenly he thrust inside, bearing himself to the hilt in one stroke.
Hell yeah.
Homeboy made no time for her to get used to him. He said, "You gonna take this dick." And this part made me laugh a little. She purposely closed her eyes because she didn't want to see his face because she hates him so much. Like, they're like having sex and she has her eyes screwed shut.
Oh my goodness.
She did not want to see him.
The sounds of their rapid breaths and barely contained sounds filled the room. Her blood pounded loudly in her ears. Her palms ached from being pressed so hard into the granite. Her back arched as her spine curved, legs hitting higher on his hips to get a better angle as he got into the rhythm of the movements. Quick, fast, hard. His hand hard on the back of her neck, the only other place he touched her. And then another sound penetrated her lust-induced daze. A knock. Fuck. Who is it?
Daddy.
They're mid-fuck, and it's her father's detail telling her father wants her to come out now. Tristan looked at her with like the look of, "Well, are you gonna answer or what?" And just as she opened her mouth to say something, he pulled out and slammed super hard into her.
Her mouth opened instinctively to cry out at the suddenness of the movement, and his other hand clapped over her mouth, muffling the sound. Well, how's she gonna answer?
He changed his angle and started to fuck her with what I can only describe as rabbits mating.
Just
The detail knocked again and he changed his angle once more, hitting her G-spot. And she had an earth-shattering orgasm, but he kept going.
He kept moving. She kept exploding. And she bit down on his hand before she realized it, trying to find some purchase of the intense currents of pleasure zapping all her senses, making her wail and whine and whimper in her throat as she bit and bit and bit on his hand, drawing blood. The knock came again. The taste of copper and rust filled her mouth. He didn't remove his hand. She didn't remove her teeth. And he thrust in one last time before stilling, expanding inside her before flexing his hips in reflex, exploding into his own orgasm, her walls quivering around him in stunned aftershocks. His own small, shallow thrust spurred more from them, milking her as she milked him for all he was worth. His hand tight on her neck, a low rumbling sound, the only sound from him. His breaths were rapid, quick and shallow like his thrusts, her own matching his. She was done, so done.
Can you imagine fucking someone and they're just like literally gnawing on your hand? Like,
I feel like that would take me out of the moment.
Yeah. The next thing she heard was her father's voice, demanding she comes out of the bathroom and to stop sulking like a child. She pulls herself together and is surprised that there's not one hair out of place. She's about to apologize for biting his already injured hand when the detail once more interrupts, and she's just annoyed as fuck at this point. After her and Tristan share a mutual self-loathing for fucking one another, she turns to leave the restroom. Just as she passed Tristan, he catches her arm and tells her to break his arm next time.
Okay.
When she's walking back to her table, her eyes meet Dante, and immediately she knows that he knows. He knew exactly where she was, who she was with, and what they were doing. And he's not looking at her with any judgment in his eyes. The rest of dinner, she could feel him watching her, and this is Tristan. And as they're leaving, her phone vibrates. It's a text message from Tristan, and he texted her, "Apparently you're not out of my system, Miss Vitalio."
Of course.
Her father walks up to her as she's reading the message and demands to know what she was doing with Tristan Kane.
Well, yeah, you guys both disappeared for 20 minutes in the bathroom. Yeah.
Obviously, you know what they're doing.
She plays dumb and she's like, what? Who's Tristan? Tristan Kane who? Because technically they were never introduced to each other, so like she should not really know him.
Mm-hmm.
But her dad's not fucking dumb. They're walking towards the lot where the cars are parked, and Tristan walks out and he goes to talk to Dante. And Tristan looks at her father dead in the eyes, and he just stares him down. And he's like not helping the situation at all.
Yeah, no.
They get inside the house now that they're home, and again, he demands to know what she was doing with him, and she straight up tells him that she was having sex with him. He gets angry, and he's like, tell me the truth. She's like, no, really. Like, I was having wild sex with him in the bathroom, and you were right outside. He tells her that she was not doing that because he raised her better, and she's like, actually, you literally didn't raise me at all. Then he asks her, what about the man on the bike? And she tells him, yeah, I fucked him too, which technically she did because it was Tristan.
I'm a whore, Dad.
They have a heated discussion that if he tries to imprison her because he's like, that's it, you'll never know freedom again. And she's like, go ahead, try it. I will literally go to the FBI and that'll be the end of you. Which is really ballsy of her because, like, why would you threaten the FBI to a mob man?
Yeah, he's gonna kill you.
She's at the very top of the staircase, right? So she's about to walk away and her father yells at her that he has not done their conversation and forcefully grabs her arm. She's wearing high heels and the motion makes her twist her ankle over the landing. And as her father has a hold on her arm, he's literally keeping her upright over the stairs. So she's like dangling over it now, and he looks her straight in the eyes and just lets go. And she falls down the entire flight of stairs.
Oh.
Very Scar and Mufasa.
Yeah. I was going to say, very The Staircase, where the husband allegedly pushes his wife down the staircase and she dies.
No, she got attacked by an owl.
Who lets them in the house? Who lets the owls in the house?
No, she was outside drinking wine. She got attacked by an owl. She went inside and then she fell down the stairs.
You believe that?
No, I think he pushed his wife down the stairs.
Marana laid there, struggling to even breathe, but somehow she gathered her strength to get up, grab her clutch that held her phone and her keys, and walk to her car. She drove while sobbing, letting herself realize what the fuck actually just happened, that her father could have and would have just killed her if she'd like snapped her neck while falling down the stairs. And she drove subconsciously to Tristan's penthouse. She had no friends. She couldn't go to a hospital because that would flag the authorities. She couldn't go to a hotel because her clothes were bloody and probably torn. So she went to the one place that didn't make sense but made her feel safe.
That's her man.
As she parked her car, she's in so much pain, emotional and physical, and she couldn't move. She breaks down and she hears the elevator ding, and it's Dante. He walks by and sees her car and calls after her, and she gets out and he freezes. He looks at her in anger and asks three words. Who did this? She tells him she fell down the stairs, and he tells her to go upstairs and to rest. She feels very vulnerable, and she's not used to letting anyone care for her, so she tries telling him no, that she'll just go to a friend's house, even though they both know that she has no one else. Eventually, he's able to convince her, and she gets in the elevator. Once she's in, she sees her reflection, and the sight is terrifying. She's black and blue and bloody and battered from her fall. She tells herself once the doors try to open that she's just going to hit the ground floor again to get back to her car and just find somewhere else to go, because she cannot let Tristan see her like this. When the elevator opens, he's already there waiting. She hits the down button quickly before he can see her, but at the last minute, his eyes look up, catching hers, and he shoots his hand out to stop the lift.
Oh.
He takes her in whole, not saying anything at all, just looking her head to toe, and then steps to the side to let her in the house. He charged into the spare bedroom, and like he starts like slamming stuff and like muttering under his breath. And by the time she got into the spare bedroom, the bathroom was open and there was a steaming bath waiting for her. She took painkillers and woke up 8 hours later to ruckus in the house. Tristan barged in and demanded her keys and told her that her father put a tracker on her car and it led him straight to their house. She sees Amara the next morning and asks to borrow her car because she needs to get the hell out of Dodge. She feels like everything's very overwhelming for her at the moment.
Well, yeah.
When Amara says no, she asks if she knows why Tristan hates her and if she could tell her why. She says that she can't say anything besides to look up when the alliance ended. So there's a little family debate. To break it down, Dante thinks that Marana can't stay with them because it's obviously fucking messy, but Tristan is not hearing any of it. Like, he will not let Marana stay without him. Marana and Tristan are having a heavy stare down when she needed to break the tension, so she decided to ask him when the alliance ended, and he told her it ended 20 years ago. It's late in the night, and Marana knew that she could not stay with Tristan any longer, so she packed up what little things she had and was set to leave. But before she left, she sent Tristan a text message saying thank you, and she wishes him well, and then she went down to her car. And of course, she sent the message before she actually left. So by the time she got to her car, she took two steps and he burst through the stairwell and was like, hey, where are you going?
Come back.
Girl, send the text message after you left, dummy.
Yeah.
And she's like three cars away from her own and he catches her. And he tells her not to run away from predators because they love the hunt. And he basically made her come to realization that she wanted him. He wouldn't let her go. And there's no sense in fighting this. So she stepped back into the elevator and went back to the house.
And that's where I stopped the book.
It's 2 days later, and she's feeling more headstrong and decided to write a new set of codes to undo the effects of the original codes. She made a failsafe. Only, she needs her software, which is at her house and her study, to get this done. She woke in the night, and she instantly knew she wasn't alone. Tristan was there watching her sleep.
Tristan.
She, like, seductively stretches, and she's like, makes, like, a little moan. And then she gets a text message from him saying, meet me in the parking lot in 5 minutes. She does, and he's already on his bike with an extra helmet. She's like, okay, this is not what I thought, but I'm down. They go on a nice little ride, which was, like, honestly the best time ever for her, until they pull up to a very familiar gravel road, and she knows that she's by her house. And she's like, what the fuck? Apparently, he chose now, of all times, to get her shit back. So, it turns out that Tristan has an inside man working for Marana's father. That's how he was able to get in the first time, why his security's so shitty, like, he was able to climb the wall. Because they, like, purposely turned a blind eye. They were able to get into the house, successfully grab her things, and on their way back, they almost run into a group of guards patrolling. Tristan pulls her into an alcove, pins her to the wall, and finger blasts her under her father's roof.
At a moment like this, he's just like,
Yeah. It was a very sexy, steamy, and rebellious little time for Marana. She was like, damn, this is so hot. They get out of the house successfully, and she has a text message from an unknown number that has a picture of an old newspaper article that says, count of missing girls up to 25, all between the ages of 4 and 10. And she notices that the article has a handwritten note that says, check the article from July 5th, 1998, which is an article dated 20 years ago.
Wow.
The next day, she gets to work on her code stuff and researching more about what the text said. She finds some stuff about 45 young girls going missing over a period of 10 years, and none of them were ever found. She tries asking Amara about it, but Amara is super tight-lipped and won't say anything to her, even though Marana can tell she knows something. She decides she wants answers from Tristan, and decides the best way to do that is to get dirt on him and then blackmail him, which...
Okay.
Just ask him.
Yeah.
So now she's in the car, tailing him, as he takes his SUV on a little errand. She follows him down a dirt road to an old barn. She sneaks behind him when he heads inside and eavesdrops, and Tristan is asking about someone named Doug to four sketchy-looking dudes, but one of them starts accusing Tristan of having something to do with the missing girls. A fight breaks out and Tristan takes down everyone before grilling the last guy on where Doug is. And he's told he hangs around the Saturn back room every Saturday. That's all he knows. And today is Saturday, so Mirana knows exactly where she's following him to next. She stops to change really quick and heads to the well-known mobster casino. And it's like a neutral ground, so both sides can go there and nothing bad really happens.
Okay.
She's caught by a guard trying to sneak into the back room, so he holds a gun to her and drags her by her arm to the very room Tristan is sitting in, along with six older men. His face gives nothing away, and the bouncer asks the men if anybody knows her because she was skulking around the door outside. She gives a fake name, Stacy Summers, and nobody claims her, but she's told in this room they don't play for money. They play for information, and you either leave a winner or you leave dead. So the choice is up to her, and she says she'll play.
Wow.
She's like, okay, cool, I'm in.
She's just like entering a high stakes poker game for fucking maybe information.
Yeah.
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 The rules are simple, Miss Summers, the man informed her. You pick up the gun, ask a question. The man does not answer, you pull the trigger. Empty shot, you ask another question. Man don't answer, shoot again. But he can ask back, and you don't answer, you eat the bullet.
What?
I'd be like, never mind, I don't want to play.
The game starts, and soon after, one man is already dead. Then it's Mirana's turn. She holds the gun to Tristan and asks him to tell her about the Alliance, and he tells her it's been dead for 22 years, which is like a non-answer because she already knew that. He grabs the gun and holds it to her, asking what she's doing here, and she says she's here for information. Now it's her turn. She asks why it ended, and he tells her mutual interests weren't so mutual anymore. And now it's his turn, and he says, how do you like to be fucked, Miss Summers?
She let her body remember the time his fingers had been inside her, his breath hot on her neck, his cock pressing into her back. She gave him a heated look from under her lashes and murmured in a low, sexy, just fucked bedroom voice, like, I'm gonna feel it every time I walk. Something flared sharply in his eyes for a second before it was gone. She'd have missed it if she had blinked. One of the older men with a wicked mustache whistled loudly before speaking. Come home with me tonight, baby. You'll feel it for the next month. Everyone chuckled. Fucking bastard. She was fucking another asshole at the moment, so her schedule was full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm busy.
I gotta fuck Tristan.
She asks what happened to break the alliance, and he says two parties disagreed on matters but didn't want a war. He asks what she knows about his history and the alliance. She knows his sister was one of the missing girls, but she doesn't want to divulge that secret in front of these shitty men, so she stays silent. Because remember, his sister's dead, and she put all the pieces together and was like, your sister got taken by this kid kidnapper.
Yeah, but also she's staying silent. Does that mean he has to shoot her?
Yeah, but she would rather hold his little secret than let those shitty people know.
He pulls the trigger, but purposefully misses, just grazing the outside of her arm. Something about this makes her realize that she'd been willing to keep his secret, just as he'd been willing to spare her life. And now she knows things will be different between the two of them from now on.
What? Loyalty.
He tells her to leave, and she books it out of the room and speeds back to the penthouse. He's there shortly after, and his eyes are blazing as he stares at her standing in his living room. He pins her against the counter with both of his arms at either of her sides and tells her he doesn't know whether he wants to snap her neck or fuck the life out of her, and she asks if he wants to touch her. He tells her not to ever try to control him again, and she smirks and grinds her front into him, and she's a hella soaked.
She wants to fuck him.
He releases her and walks across the room, even though she can clearly see he's got a big old boner in his pants.
Get back over here.
She figures she lost this game and goes to the guest room to hop in the shower, but as she's rinsing off, she can feel eyes on her. His eyes. The next thing she knows, he's in the shower stall with her. She strips his shirt off of him, and he pins her against the wall and whispers into her ear.
I'm a territorial man, and this has been mine since the moment you locked that bathroom door. That was one time, she informed him, even as she knew there was no stopping them now. Then let's make it a second, shall we?
Yeah, why not?
She hears his pants unzip, and I just put in parentheses, yeah, he's in the shower with pants on.
Oh, jeans, gross.
Ew, wet jeans?
He didn't even undress. She already took his shirt off in the shower, so he just fully clothed was like, hey.
That's so weird. I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? Take your clothes off.
He slides a condom on, and then he slides into her and begins to fuck her and tells her next time she tries some shit like that, he's gonna shoot her in the heart because he decides when she dies, and she calls him crazy, and he says, no, I'm fucking crazy.
Okay.
What do you mean? Yeah. That's what she just said.
Yeah, you're crazy.
Add another level to it.
Yeah, I'm fucking crazy. She comes and then he goes still while still inside of her. She asks why, as in why he didn't kill her. Why are they doing this? Why is all of this happening, etc. But he doesn't answer and just punches the wall above her head. And he just keeps on punching the wall as he screams and curses at nothing above her head while she's naked in the shower.
And he's still inside of her?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. But either way, she's just chilling. She's just standing there and she's just like, okay, we'll get it out, I guess.
The fuck?
Kyle had too much monster.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then he leaves. She calms down and goes to bed. And as she's lying down, she gets another text from the weird number with a link with the name Luna Evelyn Kane. She clicks the link and it takes her to a photo of a toddler version of her, Marana, sitting with two other small girls as tears run down her little cheeks. So now she knows that she was one of the missing girls.
Well, thank goodness she's not his sister.
I know.
She's sitting in the living room crying about what she's just discovered when Tristan walks in asking if he hurt her by, like, punching above the wall.
Thanks for asking 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She says no, but that she knows about his sister, that she was taken and never came back, and also that she was taken too. Marana asks if that's why he hates her, because she came back and his sister didn't. He says no, but he doesn't have to tell her why he hates her, because only he needs to know the reasons why he does what he does, and then he goes back to bed.
I'd be like, no, tell me.
Yeah, he's like, none of your business. None of your business why I hate you.
That would drive me crazy.
Yeah.
The next day, Tristan tells her the funny business is over. The guards are not letting her out of the penthouse after her little stunt yesterday. She pushes past him and gets into the elevator anyway, driving her car to a cemetery where she can lay in the grass. As she sits with her thoughts, her phone rings. It's her dad, and when she answers it, he tells her he had such plans for her, but she decided to whore around with the enemy instead. He knows she's out of the house alone, and she's been branded a traitor.
Oh, shit.
She tells him that she knows she was kidnapped as a child, and he's like, yeah, and you should have died. Yeah, daddy.
Fuck her dad.
He hangs up on her and she knows she fucked up coming out here alone. She runs back to her car but sees a little black box under the wheel well with a blinking red light. She books it and then her car explodes behind her.
Jesus Christ. Very mob.
She was gonna blow her ass up.
Yeah.
She spots two of her father's men nearby in an SUV and shoots the gas tank, exploding them.
Hell yeah.
She calls Amara to come pick her up, and then Tristan texts her saying that she really signed his death warrant with her father, and she's like, yeah, he's real mad. Also, I blew up a car and killed two men. And I don't think she's killed anybody at this point.
I don't think so either.
Damn.
So she's like, dang, that's crazy. I just killed two people.
Yeah, I wonder how that would feel.
Probably not great.
But also, they tried to kill her, so...
It was warranted.
It's a doggy-dog world.
Amara shows up, and Marana tells her what just happened and how she knows about the missing girls and how she was one of them. And she thanks Amara for showing up for her. Amara says that she likes Marana and wants nothing more than to form a friendship with her, but her being with Tristan is dangerous because he will inevitably hurt her due to the hatred he harbors in his heart. But it's not her story to tell. Then she says she's willing to tell Marana if it'll help her understand Tristan and save him from himself. So she's like, I can't tell you.
But
I'm good. Good.
So when Tristan was 8 years old and his baby sister had just gone missing, he'd overheard the grown-ups talking about a little girl who'd just been found. He was eavesdropping in on 10 scary mobster dudes, including Marana's father, along with her mother and a newly found baby Marana. He could tell immediately that Marana's father was a bad man. They started talking about how she was found. She was just dropped back off at the gates 4 days after she was taken. So they didn't even find her. She was just given back.
Bad baby.
Fucking baby back.
This baby sucks. Marana's mother is sent out of the room, and Tristan's father starts to grill Marana's father about why she was returned, accusing him of knowing exactly who's behind all of these disappearances. So he's like, you know who did this. That's why they brought your daughter back while my daughter is still missing. What the fuck?
Yeah.
It gets heated between the two fathers, with Tristan's dad demanding to know where Luna is. Guns are drawn, and Tristan's dad points the gun right at Marana's head, saying if he doesn't spill the beans, his baby dies.
Damn.
Uh-huh. And Marana's just, like, sitting in the middle of this table, just, like, chilling.
Being a little baby.
Just being a baby.
Just being a baby. Tristan saw a gun lying next to him, and he snags it just as Marana's father is like, I can't tell you anything. Do what you need to do.
Oh, my God.
Not even gonna save his baby. He's like, shoot the fucking baby. I don't care.
I feel like it's not... his baby. That's why he doesn't give a fuck.
No, I think it's his baby.
He's just a cold-hearted fucking monster.
Yeah, he's like, shoot the fucking baby. I'll make another one. I don't care.
Jesus.
He watched as his dad unlocked the gun and started to pull the trigger, and he panicked because he knew this was beyond wrong. So he sees his dad about to shoot a baby. He has a gun in his hand. So he points his own gun at his dad, pulls the trigger, and shoots his own father dead.
Holy fuck. Yeah, that'll ruin a life right there.
He runs up to Mirana and comforts her as she was crying from terror, and then he noticed his father's lifeless body. His mother walked back in and took in the scene, telling Tristan he's a monster and is absolutely dead to her. So his mom is, like, going through it because her daughter just went missing.
Yeah.
Her son just shot her husband. So she's like, fuck you, kid.
That's insane.
He's just lost his entire family. He looks down at the baby he was holding and feels nothing but hatred. He'd lost his baby sister, his father, and his mother all because of her. And one day she would pay. That's why he hates her.
Oh, okay.
I hate you, baby.
It's all your fault, little baby.
Also, all the mob guys think Tristan is the hardest dude ever for shooting his own dad. So it's totally cool with them. They're like, oh, fuck yeah.
They're like, hey, you want to join? You want to join?
He was later taken in by Dante's father and trained to be the killer he is today. As Mirana and Amara sit and talk about how she's going to process all of this, two more of her father's men show up, but they're followed by Tristan, who quickly takes out their kneecaps, demanding to know where Mirana is. They say they don't know, so he tells them to scram while they still can. When they're gone, Mirana stands up and walks to him so he knows she's still alive and tells him she knows everything now. She thanks him for saving her, and she's so, so sorry for everything, even though she was just an innocent baby.
I'm sorry I ruined your life when I was a baby.
Yeah. Well, she's like, I'm sorry. Also, I know it's not my fault, but like, I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry a bunch of full-grown adults around me made choices. And I was a baby, and I was around that as well.
My apologies. She's sorry for what it did to his life, and if he wants to, now is his chance to kill her. But after today, she will never allow him the opportunity to take her life. So take it or leave it. He points his gun at her, and she accepts that this is the end, but then his lips come crashing down on her. It's raining, it's passionate, it's romantic, and also he's rubbing the gun on her face.
Yeah, a little reminder.
That was like one of the things they couldn't kiss because it was too intimate. So he's like, I love you.
Yeah, yeah.
With my gun.
But also, bitch.
Yeah. Finally, he steps back and puts his gun arm down, and she knows she's going to live. He walks away, and she follows him into the dark.
Oh, my fucking
God. End.
Good grief.
Where are the codes? I don't know.
Yeah. What an ending.
Good thing we have the failsafe.
Good thing. Did she ever finish it?
No one knows.
Did she ever implement them?
No one knows.
So, Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I'll give it 3.
Okay.
It was okay. It was fine.
Yeah, it was cheesy.
Yeah, I don't think I would read it.
Do you think that Tristan Kane is sexy?
Yeah, a little, I guess. Yeah.
He's literally got beef with a baby.
Yeah. But he was a child, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
It's hard.
Would you trade places with Mirana?
No, that sounds terrible.
So next week, we're telling Riley all about Little Stranger by Lee Rivers, and we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about. And I will give you a hint and say this is potentially the most taboo book we've ever covered.
More taboo than Credence?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, no, because this kind of has the same premise as what was the one? Oh, it's going to bug me.
Stepbrother Dearest or whatever?
That one, and there was one more that was like brother vibes.
Okay, you're saying taboo, and now you're saying brother vibes.
You know, I don't want to give it away, but there is a scene that I think takes this to the next level.
I think I know what you're talking about.
So it says Little Stranger. It's got a spider on the cover and like webs. And now that you guys are saying taboo, you're mentioning brother. I think it's going to be maybe a little family romance.
Ew.
I don't know in which way because this does look dark. It does look like a dark book. I think it's going to be either a battered and bruised sister or brother, but they're not blood related in any way. Maybe one of them was brought in as like a family friend. They lost their parents or in another sad way like that. Okay. And then they develop feelings for each other over time. But it's like not good. It's toxic. But then they just like do the damn thing, even though it's weird, but they do it.
Where the hell?
Yeah.
And then they also have to kill people. I don't know why, but they do. I'm saying that because this book looks dark. How'd I do?
Not bad. Little sprinkles.
Okay.
Well, we'll find out next week.
Yes, we will.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at @smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at @smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.